Rishayim.
Derech Hashem, February 19th.
These Rishayim, they're completely evil. And then we talk about Raiv. And then it's Tzaddikim that are on the side of the... on the side of Raiv Mitzvahs. Or they have the Yisraelis Amuna, and they go forever. We said the, even a Rasha Gomer, someone that's a total Rasha, could have some meisim that he did that justice dictates he must be rewarded. And those things he gets in this world. But what if someone's not a Rasha Gomer? He's a Rasha, he's not a Rasha Gomer. He's a Rasha. It's like a mixture.
Like a banny?
Vihine, and behold. Alpisharis is based on this roots. The roots. No. Timatza Ivar Khanagrad. You could break down the categories even further to another level. We're gonna break them down again. Vidina Maisim. Ishpaidisan. That people's actions are judged. Roisha Tagia Taldaisam. That they there's ramifications.
Did we already sort of go through this?
What?
Sort of went through this.
We're going to do it again. But we're breaking it down even finer. We're making fine flour out of coarse flour. So that the Sufganiyah will be really pottery.
Salt them past that
we
made in Israel.
Now it says, Adam is a partner. Then when the Kodesh Baruch has that final day in court, the final Yemidin. So remember who's on his side and who's on the side that opposes God. This guy would make it. He'll make it, barely, by the skin of his teeth. If I into my sin, and there'll be certain actions of his, but according to celestial justice, Amaduktiv, which is exact by Yashern, and doesn't deviate, it's straight. Still, it doesn't. A person doesn't deserve Elu Zman Azur. Oh, to get rewarded in Eilam Haba. So this is a very scary thing. You have someone that he made it. However the judgment system or the accounting system, he made it. He's going to make it to eternity. But the way he led his life, he had ups and downs, and the downs were pretty down, and there were ups, and his heart is in the right place. And the Kaddish Baruch says, "You deserve to be with the Kaddish Baruch for all eternity." But the vast majority of the things the person did, he's very much trapped in the reality which we call Olam Hazeh. It's hard to give examples for these things, but I guess an example would be someone that did have a moral life, a good life, a nice life, but Olam Haba wasn't really part of his consciousness. It was more relegated to the rear, to the subconscious. There is no, he's a very Olam Hazedic person. But deeply buried, there is a belief that there is eternity and there is Olam Haba. But he doesn't live with that on a day. That's not alive in him. There are certain people that will make it for all eternity, and they have a lot of meisim ta'ivim, a lot of diburim ta'ivim, a lot of makshavas ta'ivis. But because they are so attached to Olam Hazeh, then they will receive the vast bulk of their reward in Olam Hazeh. Now they're not to be compared to a Rosh Hagamer, because a Rosh Hagamer receives all of his reward in Olam Hazeh. A Rosh Hagamer, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to be with.
Well, if we're getting any reward in this world, is that to say that we're attached to this world and that's why we're getting our reward?
You never know why something is coming. The person would have, you know, the famous mushroom with the expense account. Salesman goes on a trip to Wichita, Kansas. Who's the one? Wichita, Kansas. goes to Wichita, Kansas, and he's selling socks. Selling silk stockings to the people, to the fine people in Wichita, Kansas. He makes about $2,000 a month salary, no matter how many socks he sells. He gets a 23% commission for every pair of socks he sells. And he goes off to Wichita, Kansas. And he sells a lot of socks. He goes there, he stays in a hotel. He takes the clients out to lunch. Rents a car. And then every time a year, finishes up his business at the restaurant, he asks them for a receipt. What's he going to do with that receipt? Oh, he's going to have a whole pile of receipts. And when he gets back,
oh God, how much you made.
To Hunley, Minnesota, he's going to give those receipts over to the accounting office. They're going to tally it up. And if it's reasonable, they're going to write out a check for the amount they'll give it to him. Is that his salary at all?
He just pays his expenses.
No, it's not at all.
It's part of his job.
Is that his salary at all?
They smoke for 2 months, go to Dougie, and go to pizza.
Within reason, they give you, is that his salary at all?
Why
that
not
is, the company wants him to do a job. And he can't do the job if he doesn't eat. So when he eats, they pay for it. You can't do the job if you can't sleep. You can't do the job if you can't get around. You can't do the job if you don't have these power martini lunches.
He's got to do something. He's got to, like, sip his car, maybe. Like, save some money.
I believe
it's something like a can tuna. Yeah.
But say he can do the job with a cheap car, but he gets an expensive car.
When something good happens to a person in this world, he wins something, he earns something, it's a bonus. Something good happens. So then there are two ways to look at it. One is that he's getting reward for his Meisim Teichen, which is bad, because he's getting money in return for eternity, and that's a lousy deal. The other way of looking at it is that in order for him to do Meisim Teichen in the first place, he needs to eat, he needs to have a place to live, he needs to have a way of getting around. He can't feel deprived, so he's not getting his reward from Olam Haba. That's the expensive kind. But Derek Klau, like Shmuel, wants to know, how do you tell what the difference is? Shmuel, I know, he wants to know, how do you tell the difference? And I don't know, but there's a certain general set of guidelines that if it's your basic needs, you could safely assume that it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu supplying your basic needs so you can get the job done in life.
Basic needs?
And if it's luxuries, then you have to be scared. That if you're getting a
little more than bread and water.
Oh, so Aaron wants to know what basic needs is. The definition of basic needs, is anything that a person would be without, he'd feel deprived. Yes, it's based on your society. It's based on your... So for one person, a Lexus could be basic needs. And for another person, a Lexus could be taking away his reward in eternity. And you have to be honest with yourself. If somebody was raised wealthy, his needs are different. Do you know there's a Gemara Masechta Ksubos?
Yeah, because he was poor.
And if a guy was raised wealthy, and then he became poverty stricken,
you have to
hire runners to run ahead of him and announce his coming? Why?
Because it's hard to come, that's the basic.
That's what he is. When the Rishonim say that's only if people think he's still wealthy. That's an interesting, because he needs to keep up the facade. But if everyone knows he's poor, you're not going to do that. Okay. But you have to deal with...
So what if you were born poor, but then you became rich? So then
I said a lot of it has to do with environment, personality. There are people that are born poor, and because they're born poor, they can't be without.
You mean they can't be without?
They can, because they grew up poor their whole life. They have no sense of security. And they constantly have to reassure themselves that they're not going to starve to death.
What shall I say? The Yosef Avremel.
Let me ask you, how else could it be otherwise? Could you possibly have some kind of like an arbitrary amount that's considered necessity and luxury? Like, what's the alternative? Up to 80,000 is necessity, over there is luxury?
I don't know. It's kind of scary.
It has to be relative. It's relative.
Is this if you like get money like by winning something or like
that's
or
a
like
good example.
You work for it, like you work and you have a good job and you make millions of dollars.
Yeah, but what if you're working 18 hours a day to make those millions of dollars?
Yeah, so then it's
so
not
then
like
you're
a
not
gift. Like you're working
it is a
hard.
Gift because it's people that work that hard that make nothing. You work. There's no direct correlation between work and salary. You work, God sees that you work, and God sends you a salary. There's people that work that don't make a salary, there's people that don't work that do make salaries.
So, what do you, is it bad to have like a really good job?
It's great to have a great job, but it's bad to invest the time and the money in schooling in order to get a job that's going to earn you for things that you don't need.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
And if, you get those things, you might be eating your own leg. Remember the muscle from its spine?
Yeah.
So it's scary that you have people that they spend a good 8 to 10 years of their life going through a process to get themselves a job that's going to earn them what they don't need. And then when they earn what they don't need, they're eating themselves up alive. It's sort of pointless.
How does one know what they need? In other words, these people, I'm saying, if they're so dedicated to go through school,
you have to know yourself. And you also you hang around good people. Yes. If somebody grew up, he's the son of a doctor, his father's a doctor, his mother's a doctor, his brother's a doctor, and he sees himself as a doctor, and he knows more medicine than doctors, and he's very good at it. And he's going into it because he feels that this is what he has to be. That's a legitimate reason to do it.
Okay.
When someone's being a doctor because he wants to rip off everybody and become wealthy, that's not a legitimate reason.
What if they don't want, what if they're becoming a doctor? Not because they want to become wealthy, because they want
that's
to become a doctor.
That's not the example that I gave. I gave two examples.
I understand, but they're two
I want to give you, that's right, because I'm not capable
right.
of giving middle
you
of the
it
road.
It doesn't matter. Right?
Middle of the road things, how do I know what? I'm not, that's called giving an opinion. Extremes is not an opinion. That makes sense. But you're going to ask me to give an opinion. I'm not into that. I don't really know. It's very gray. If someone that goes into profession because he wants to earn more money than he needs to earn, it's wrong. My Rebbe Gifter was very pro-working. Very pro-working. Very pro-working. But he felt that in order to earn enough to make a living, you don't need to go to college for 8 years. So why do people go to college for 8 years? Because they want to make more than a living.
How long did he say you should go to college for?
He said you could take summer. You could take courses in the summer. There's certain fields that you could do very well in. You could take accounting courses. You could apprentice yourself to a jeweler. He had real estate. He knew how people made money, and these people make just as much money as anyone else. He says you want to be dafka in learning, so be a rebbe, but only if you're good at it. If you're not good at it, don't be a rebbe. Just do the world a favor and become an accountant. The people that they enter certain fields because they want to have two luxury cars, they want to have a house that's bigger than the family and they're planning on having. People that earn a lot of money don't necessarily have big families. Sometimes it's the other way around. There are people that earn a lot of money and they have big families and they're not wealthy. And I respect them. And they really have to work very hard and they have to make a lot of money and they don't get to hold on to it. But there's very wealthy people. I know someone, there's two kids in the family and there's an 11-bedroom house. with a bathroom in each bedroom and a jacuzzi in four of them. 11 bedroom house with 11 bathrooms and four of them have jacuzzis, and he has two children. So someone like that, you have to be worried about. I mean, I hope not. He's a nice guy. But someone like that, you don't know who should be worried.
Why does he have that many rooms?
He wanted it.
What?
Because he wanted it.
But what does he do with the other rooms? They just
It doesn't matter.
He has them. His mother lives by him, so that's a very nice cousin. It is a nice cousin. And that's a Tsitkis. But he didn't get 11 bedrooms, his mother should visit him. It's
11 bedrooms? And then he has the living room?
You want a lot, you know? You want a lot. It's like you get a 500 gig hard drive, even though you only have 80 gig stuff of stuff to put on it. Why?
Because
you want something that's the you want extra. Right. I'm not judging anyone, and you can't judge someone. It could be that he needs it. But yeah, someone has claustrophobia. Someone has claustrophobia. It's an illness. The same thing. He has claustrophobia. So he has to have bedrooms as big as the base mattress.
Like him and God.
Isn't that luxury? That's right. It's between him and God. And it's between me and you. So what if you have someone that he will get eternally, but he had his ups and downs, and he's very much, he has a very strong attachment to Eilam Hazeh. His heart's in the right place. He'll get eternity. But it's not black and white. That's the point he's making now. Someone that gets eternity, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get the reward for all of his Maisim Tovim in Eilam Hazeh. He made it. He crossed the red line, the threshold. But there are certain mitzvahs of his that were very Eilam Hazeh things. And he's going to get the reward from Eilam Hazeh, and he'll lose his kind of hammer. And when he dies, he will. No.
What is the punishment?
No, not punishment.
He's still being Eilam Hazeh, but not as.
But he's going to have very little. Instead of the Yisrael, that man will be left with Mishifle and Itzkim, the lowest of the eternal ones. I have no idea what this means. The lowest of the eternal ones.
The guy's eye that you knocked out, then you got a problem.
The smallest of that group.
Right, exactly.
The lowest of the immortals. He said it's very similar to someone that loses his pain in Eilam Hazeh. But don't get fooled by the similarity. Because the Rosh Hagamah, his meisim, any meisim he did in this world never touched Eilam Hazeh. He had a sense of social justice. Don't steal from your neighbor, because if you steal from him, he'll steal from you, and then you won't be able to enjoy this world. Sense of social justice. His actions never left this world. So he's not going to leave this world. That's a Rosh Hagamah. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about now is that they did have a sense of eternity.
I spoke Hebrew.
It's just that there was a small little voice in the background. You know, this is very scary, because I feel that this describes a large proportion of the people of this world. Even B'nai Torah. We do have a concept, we have a sense of Eilam Hazeh. But that's not the driving force of our lives. We have a sense of Eilam Hazeh. We don't see Eilam Hazeh in everything. We're not like the guy, whenever he used to tell over the story. It was just more fun to watch him tell it over than the actual story. So I don't know if you'll get the Gans Gans kind out of it, but he told over, he turned around in the face. There was a Chas Sefer Torah in a village in Europe on a Wednesday. And there was a guy in the outhouse when it took place. So they had the Sefer Torah, and they were dancing, yelling, and singing. And the guy was in the outhouse, not an outhouse.
Yeah.
It's a porta john, right?
Yeah.
And these booths, you know. Uh-huh. The guy was in the outhouse before they brought the Sefer Torah out, the new Sefer Torah. It was a regular day, and he goes into the outhouse, and then all of a sudden, when he's in the outhouse, they bring out the Sefer Torah, and people are dancing and singing. And in the outhouse, he hears people dancing and singing in the middle of the week. And he runs out of the outhouse with his pants not fastened. He was holding his, he didn't take the time to fasten his pants, and he was holding his pants up and running out of the outhouse and going like this, at Kikumen, the Shia came, you know, because he couldn't imagine why anybody would be dancing and singing on a Wednesday in the middle of the week if it wasn't for that. So that's a Jew that's a Jew that's living in El Haba. So we have a sense of El Haba, but we're not like that. I knew someone, and he passed away a few years ago. A good friend of Shimon's great grandfather, that he had a suitcase under his bed. Similar, I mean, he had a suitcase under his bed. Yeah, he should be packed already. You know, this is something which you heard about big tzaddikim. But I knew a person that had it. I mean, at least it was assumed that he had it.
Wait, he was in America though?
In Cleveland.
The rabbi who had the shiur online now? The shiur who gets
what?
Really quiet rabbi who, like, you said, he had seven lessons and you're saying, like, you only have seven, you don't have ten.
Yeah, I've become.
Yeah.
I didn't have shiur in my life.
Did you get from the Audi Live?
Oh, yeah, live, I got another gift this year.
There's
a prime three kids. I'm talking about a prime three kids. He was a Yid HaTzadik. He lived in El Mahabra. So we are not talking about people like that. We're talking about people that to them El Mahabra is a reality, but the vast majority of their life's resources is invested in El Mahabra. They will make it to El Mahabra, but they're not going to have... So there's a very big difference between them and a Rosh HaGomer. Because a Rosh HaGomer never gets there, and they'll at least get there. But they'll be from the smallest to the tiniest of the immortals. This is a phrase which we're coining this year. The tiniest of the immortals. So, yeah, people, we pat ourselves on the back to our life because we know we're not Rishon Gemurim. Who thinks of himself as a Rosh HaGomer? We're not Rishon Gemurim. Is that a good person? I gave away my old clothes to the Salvation Army. I'm a good person. Don't realize that the more we're fazunkin, the more we're sunk into the cesspool of Olam Hazeh, that is our reality, is Olam Hazeh. So then the more reward Hashem gives us in this Olam Hazeh. And that should be a scary thing.
So what are we supposed to think?
Like, get out of the cesspool.
How are we supposed to consider ourselves?
Well, it takes a lot of work to believe in the reality which you can't see.
No, I'm saying, like...
You know, there's one thing about doing good things and staying away from the bad things. That's one level, and that's definitely the ikker. That is the ikker. But on another level, there's believing in the right, in reality, not being fooled by the false reality. So what we're supposed to do is convince ourselves, or be convinced, that true reality is what we don't see, and if we see it, it's false reality. It's the opposite. It's the opposite of what we would think. If you could see it, don't trust it. You can't see it, so then you can begin to investigate or rely upon such a thing. But something which can be seen with the naked eye, can't trust. Right?
You're a terror.
Because you'll be fooled. You can see it, don't trust it.
What about Torah?
What?
What about Torah?
Anybody who thinks that they can see Torah is is severely, severely misguided. Everything about Tara is that I have no idea what. There's nothing that I can understand on the surface. Tara is like, whoa, like what is up? Did you ever learn a piece of Tara that you have any understanding of it?
We have to adjust our
sense of what reality is. Reality is eternity. Reality is yet to come. Right. This is, don't trust what we see, because...
It's cool, though.
No, it wasn't. Don't trust what you see, because trust what you see can be fooled. Today's not my day.
It's okay, ready?
Wait, we do the other one.
Definitely not my day. Anyway, don't trust what you see.
It's good, Raven.
No, it's not good, Raven.
New change,
huh?
Make change.
Can't.
Why not?
All right. So now you can understand the Surah Emanation. That says, with the combination of this power, you can see the danger of having a good life. So now you can understand the Surah Emanation. Someone's in pain in this world. And pain is physical pain, and it's emotional pain, and it's insecurity. So maybe Hashem is punishing a person, okay. And that's not a comfortable thought.
No, it's good.
Or maybe, right. It's, yeah, but you like to think that you did everything right.
Okay? No, but if you're getting punished, then it's much better to get in this one than the next.
That's true. Or maybe, Hashem has determined that you're a person, that your connection to Adam Hazar is endangering you because you're going to get the reward for your good things in this world. Hashem doesn't want you to use up all your good things in this world. So he makes Adam Hazar not a comfortable place for you. Now a person can react to that in two ways. One is you could say, I can't believe why this is happening to me. Why do I deserve it? I'm a good person. Oh, what a rotten turn of fate. This is terrible. This is so, you know, unacceptable. I can't take it anymore. I just want to get out, you know. And then you waste an opportunity. Then you waste an opportunity. It's a wasted opportunity. Or, when faced with the situation that Adam has is not such an attractive proposition after all, getting the message that this is not the real world, there's a better world. I'd rather have a comfortable there than have a comfortable here. Because you have a comfortable there, it's for all eternity. And you have a comfortable here, it's only until the quarter. These massage chairs, you put in the... How much were they, massage chairs? You put in 5 shekel, you feel like $1 million. What an awesome Eilam Hazar! You can sit down in a chair, and it runs up and down your back. It's so comfortable! Yeah, you idiot! It's gonna last for 3 minutes! And then it's over! Take the 5 shekel and buy a Danish for a poor guy. That'll last forever. Yeah? Right, this is an introduction. I mean, we just finished Park Chinese, and we're going
to
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.